If you've ever wondered what will happen if you kill a sick deer, well, I experienced that just this season, 2024 archery season. On opening day, I killed a deer that had some sort of serious illness that we still don't really know what it was, but we do have some clues. It was a pretty interesting situation, and it kind of ended on a good note, but still not really something I hope that you, listener, will ever have to go through. I now have a freezer full of deer meat that I'm not really sure the best way to eat it. But let me tell you this story, and then maybe if you ever find yourself experiencing it, you'll kind of have a better idea of how to go about it. Because no one ever told me what to do if I killed a sick deer, and it was kind of hard to figure out where to go. So my friend Seth and I were going to do a river hunt. We borrowed his father-in-law's drift boat, and we went down to the river. And the spot where we launched, because we like to kind of hit some more of the secret reaches of the river, we actually had to slide the drift boat down this probably 30-foot embankment that's almost vertical. And so we tied some ropes to the drift boat. We had all of our gear inside of it. And then we just kind of pushed it down and used the rope to try to carefully lower it to the river. And I mean, that whole thing was an adventure there, let alone trying to learn how to control a drift boat. And we were in not flood stage, but the river was chocolate milk, coursing brown, really high. And we were cooking. Once we hit that water, we knew that the 20-mile float that we had planned for the day was gonna go by like nothing. The problem is that Seth had never controlled a drift boat before. So there was a bit of a learning curve. Once we hit the water, you know, it kept trying to spin the boat around, and he'd jerk it and then get it straight again. And he just had to constantly sit on those oars and keep the boat straight. So as we're doing that, we're trying to kind of make a plan of what to do if we do see a buck, and you know, we were hoping we would. So what I did is I actually brought my bow case to have somewhere safe to set my bow. And I went ahead and knocked an arrow and just set it on top of my soft bow case and just left it there kind of hanging off the edge of the boat. And Seth's job was gonna be to just point the boat at a deer as we passed it. And then I would try to take my shot from a moving boat. I've never taken a moving archery shot before, so that was interesting. We were joking about maybe I should borrow someone's horse to shoot from the back of that, but you know, ended up just going in there with no practice on a moving shot. But we're only 15 minutes into this float, and in 15 minutes we went a whole mile. So we're 1 mile into this float, and we start kind of joking around. I said something like, man, this looks like a good bucky spot. Imagine if we just saw one sitting right there. We're kind of like laughing, like imagine if there's just one sitting right by the water. And then all of a sudden we come around the corner and there's a buck laying there right by the water. And I said, well, there's a buck now. And Seth didn't believe me at first, and he looked and there's a buck laying by the river. So I stood up and I aimed my bow, but I didn't draw it. And the buck was laying down, and I kept saying, dude, I can't shoot the deer laying down, I can't shoot. And the way the deer was laying is his butt was facing right toward us, and he had his head turned looking backward at us. And Seth starts clicking like that. And I don't know why he said that he clicks when he wants to get deer's attention. Okay. I did the classic meh like that to try to, you know, trying to get this deer to stand up. And the whole time, we're just quickly floating past the deer in this coursing river. And the deer's just staring at us. I ranged him. I had enough time to range him at exactly 20 yards. And then when Seth realized we're passing this deer, he starts paddling as hard as he can. And I'm just standing there trying to aim my bow at the deer. And at all the chaos of Seth paddling and us making noises, the deer does stand up and then kind of move down the river, maybe, I don't know, 10 yards. But where he stops is perfectly, his vitals are blocked by these 4-inch wide trees right on the edge of the river. And he's standing in the blackberry bushes, he's blocked. And I went full draw because he moved, and I'm thinking, this could be it, this could be it. And Seth is still paddling the boat as hard as he can. And then he remembered suddenly that I wanted to be pointed toward the deer. Even though I had positioned myself to shoot off the side of the boat, he digs those paddles in and he just yanks the boat and twists it really hard. And I was not ready for that. I actually fell down and barely caught myself. I'm glad I didn't go in the water. But I went, as I'm falling, I accidentally pointed my bow up in the air and released my arrow. And my arrow just, I didn't see it. Seth saw it, but my arrow just goes way up in the air over the treetops. He said he saw it go over the big firs that were by the river. Luckily, there's no houses anywhere near this, but you know, that was an accidental just discharge there. And the bow, the arrow just flies far away. And I kind of get my bearings, stand back up, knock an arrow. And at, I don't know if the sound of my shot scared him or what, my bow's not that loud. Whatever happened, the buck started jumping away like that classic spooked blacktail thing. And then the buck stops and he's at about 35 to 40 yards. I never ranged him. I just guessed at this point. And so I knocked another arrow. Luckily, the buck gave me the look back. And so the whole time, keep in mind, the left side of this buck is all that I've seen because he was laying down with his butt toward me. Then he stands up with his left side facing me and he's running now, stops, really hard quartering away shot. Like the deer is not quite facing completely away from us, but he almost is. And the only reason why I had a quartering away shot is because he turns his head again 180 degrees to kind of look over his butt at us. And at that, when he stopped, I put my pins over his vitals where his rib cage is at 30 to 40 yard pin, you know, right in between there. And I went ahead and released that arrow. And all I got to say is that God guided that arrow because it was perfect. Just a beautiful arc, you know, that at that distance, you watch that arrow fly and it, you hear that perfect sound, the thump. I've heard people describe it as hitting a pumpkin, and that's just a perfect way to describe it. And so God definitely guided the arrow, not to mention the boat was still moving. You know, we're moving 5, 6, 7 miles an hour. So it's kind of like a brisk walking speed that we're moving past this deer, and just managed to really perfectly hit him. So the arrow went in through the just on the inside of his last rib because it was such a hard quartering away shot. And then it came out just behind his opposite quarter. And the arrow did a full pass through at that angle. Shout out to the 125 grain fixed blade broadhead. That thing just went straight through him. And the buck goes down, out of sight. He was standing in the blackberry bushes. So I just assumed that, you know, he bounded away and I was gonna have to try to find him. But he just is out of sight. So then here's the next battle of trying to paddle to shore before the river takes us away. I didn't want to get too excited yet because of past experiences I've had archery hunting where I really did not want to bust this deer and have him run onto some private land or just some way that this hunt could really be messed up. So I'm saying, come on, Seth, I hit him good. I know it was a great hit. I heard the lung. It was a beautiful hit, but you know, let's give this buck at least 30 minutes before we even start looking for blood. And then when we do find blood, let's just take it real slow. And so I thought, well, let's look for my arrow to kill time because I didn't realize that I had fully launched that arrow. I thought that maybe I just kind of did a weak little half draw. And so as I'm walking on the shore where the buck was first laying down, I see that this deer had been living in this tiny spot for weeks. You know, he had a rut worn where he was taking the same path all the time, just walking this short little distance along the side of the river into this little knoll full of blackberry bushes and food for him and by the river. And then as I'm kind of looking, Seth said, well, you know, your arrow went like way over the treetops, like when they light the Olympic torch with the flaming arrows, like that thing just is gone. And into the blackberry patch. And then as he's saying that, he goes, well, wait a minute. I don't think we have to wait that long. Your buck's laying right there. I was blown away by that. Turns out we looked at where the blood trail was. There was no blood trail. That buck dropped where he stood with an archery shot. You know, that doesn't happen very often. Someone will say it does, but you know, in all reality, go ahead and watch 100 archery deer YouTube videos and 99 of them, they're going to run a bit before they die. So I was just blown away by that and thankful because, you know, we're by the river. You don't want this deer to run up into someone's field. So we walk up to it and it's just a nice looking, beautiful buck. Still, his left side is up facing me. I'm just thinking, man, this is great. Beautiful deer. I took a good picture and I go to grab an antler and flip him over, and just easy as can be, a snapping sound, and the antler just comes right off in my hand. And that was weird to me, because when I looked at it, it looked like a perfect brand new shed. It had the same marks, because what happens when an antler sheds is there's these special antler growth plates that reabsorb the calcium from the bone and mineralize it, and that's what causes the antler to break off. And so I looked at it, and it just looked exactly like a perfect shed. That was a hint to me, something's weird about this deer. If nothing else, you know, you kind of start to put it together, like there's something up here, because deer do not drop their antlers in November. We flip it over, and that's when I see that right on this buck's elbow, on the front quarter that I never saw until that moment, his elbow was completely blown out from the inside, which is weird, but it was shot in the rifle season in such a way that maybe the deer was stepping and his arm was forward and someone missed in front of the deer and they hit the inside of this elbow. And it just blew it out, maybe 3.5 inches in diameter, this blown out bone chunk hole right where his elbow joint used to be. And it didn't really look too inflamed. It wasn't pussy or oozy. It didn't stink, but it was just a big blown out hole that looked like it had been there for a while. So to me, in my mind, I immediately am thinking like, well, maybe the antler popped off because he's not in the rut anymore, but maybe also this big wound is a clue to what's going on. Then I grabbed the other antler, and this time I kind of tested it. I kind of just gave it a quick yank, and same thing. Antler just pops right off like nothing. And yeah, at this point, I'm really starting to wonder, did his injury take him out of the rut, and now he's dropping his antlers? I did a little bit of research after that, and as it turns out, I wasn't wrong. Injuries and sickness can cause a deer to shed his antlers early, especially really severe injuries like the one my buck had. Antlers normally shed due to testosterone dropping, and then that causes the calcium to be reabsorbed and the mineralization, and then the antler to fall off. But all that is caused by testosterone dropping after the rut's over. This is the same reason why their swollen necks go down. And this buck, he had the skinniest neck I've ever seen on a buck in mid-November, even for a forky. I mean, I've killed some forkies that had some fat necks. His neck was not swelled up at all. So essentially, my first thoughts, my hypothesis was right. He was so out of the rut, and his testosterone levels dropped so much that he did shed his antlers. What I didn't realize, though, is that injuries or illness could do that to a buck. So now you know. Then came the gutting. At this point, we're thinking, okay, has a bad quarter. He's out of the rut, which is weird, but we didn't really think much of it any deeper than that. And then, as we're gutting him, we notice that there's this black streaky pattern on all of his major organs. Although his blood and his skin and his diaphragm, all that looked completely normal, he had these black splotches in the places where fat normally is on a deer, and his kidneys were absolutely fatless. And that's weird because deer have a lot of fat around their kidneys. It's part of how they keep themselves warm and alive. That kidney fat plays an important role in a deer's biology. He had none. His kidneys were completely clean, bare, fatless, just straight up kidneys. Like you could put them in a jar and preserve them. No fat at all. And anywhere that there would normally be fat, like the caul fat, that is around the stomach, that like netting around the stomach of fat, where that normally was, the same pattern of texture was just black. No fat though. So it's almost like all of his fat was absorbed and replaced with this black stain. His stomach though, there's a clue, was still completely full of food. And his mouth was full of cud because he was bedded down and ruminating when I killed him. You know, like deer, they eat leaves and grass and then they lay down and they ruminate, they barf it up and chew it and swallow it into a different stomach. And so he was still eating and he still had an appetite and he still was, you know, living. It's just that he had this weird thing going on inside of him and he had that injury and he was out of the rut. He had no testosterone. So the last thing that was really the most alarming to me was the liver. I reached in and pulled on that liver, and it was the worst liver I have ever seen. In fact, ever since this happened, I've done tons of searching on the internet for pictures, and I have had a hard time finding an image on the internet of a liver that looked as bad as his. It's this gnarly blue purple color, and it's lumpy, and it has that black splotch stuff all covering all over it. And you can see what I'm describing on our social media pages if you go there. But at this point, you know, I'm starting to wonder, is this deer even edible? Because with most game, you can look at the liver to learn about the health of the animal. And his liver did not look good at all. So my first theory was that this buck must have gotten a blood infection, and maybe all that black stuff was blood from its arm injury, and that he was already dying when I found him. But the problem with that theory is, how could the fat all go away so fast? Because a blood infection kills you pretty quickly. And he was dying. There's no way he would have lasted the winter, but he wasn't dying. Like, even when he jumped away from me, he looked totally normal. His blood was normal. It's just kind of weird that all the fat was gone and he was still eating. His stomach was still full. He still had an appetite. And the other side of the coin also is, it takes time for the effects of no testosterone for the antlers to drop. This buck had to have been sick or injured for a long time for it to get to the point where his antlers were ready to shed naturally. At least weeks, which kind of tracks, since this buck was killed 2 weeks after the last day of rifle deer season. So the only thing I can imagine is that he was shot during that last week of rifle deer, and that he's just been living up on that brushy knoll by the river, staying in that small area, trying to heal up. No matter what, though, like I said, I cannot imagine this buck would survive the winter, but he had made it quite a while for only having use of three of his legs and being rotten inside. I mean, the coyotes didn't get him. There's a lot of coyotes in that area. I see coyotes almost every time I float the river at the right time of day. So he was surviving, yet he really did not look good on the inside. So we loaded the deer up. I threw the liver back in him in case it needed to be tested, and we resumed the rest of our float. And honestly, we brought the shotguns to shoot some ducks too. I was hardly paying attention to that. I was just kind of agonizing about, can I eat this deer? When I had service, I was Google searching bad deer livers and whether or not they were edible, or if you can eat an infected deer. I reached out to all the people I know who I thought would know what they were talking about, you know, Nate Bailey, Nathan Endicott, a friend named John. I reached out to Jericho, just different people who've been hunting for a long time, and none of them really had much to say, except for one friend, John, who told me that I definitely should not eat the deer and I need to call OSP to see if I could get my tag reinstated. But none of them had ever seen a deer in such bad condition. It was just a horrendous looking liver. So I tried to call OSP, and you know, it's a Saturday, it's coming close to Thanksgiving. It was really hard to get a hold of them, but finally, after a few calls, I did manage to get through to the non-emergency operator rather than directly calling the Fish and Game Enforcement office because they weren't answering calls. But the non-emergency operator, once I explained my story to him, he patched me through to a Fish and Game trooper. I left a message, and later that day the trooper called me back, and after I sent him some pictures, he told me to go ahead and get a hold of ODF&W to see what to do. And I mean, my whole goal with this, I just want to know if the deer was edible. Honestly, I understood that the chances of me getting another tag are really low, and that this was just my deer for the season. I wanted to know, is he edible? And if he's not, how do I legally get rid of a full unbutchered deer that is not edible? Monday finally came, because that's when all the ODF&W offices open. And I, first thing in the morning, Monday, I went through all the menu items and got a hold of some biologists and left messages on their personal phones. And that whole day goes by, I'm anxiously waiting, no call back. And then Tuesday morning comes and I'm thinking maybe they'll get to me, and nothing. So after I finished my meetings on Tuesday morning after work, I went ahead and called in the afternoon. And by this point, remember, the buck has been dead for 4 days. So I left messages with more biologists and called several of the ODFW offices to leave messages, and still for a few hours, no callbacks. And in every message I would say, I'm just trying to figure out if I can eat this deer and what to do with him if not. And finally, I heard back from one of the biologists. So shout out to Peter from the Suave Island office. He really helped me out a ton. He was very interested. He wanted to know the whole story, every detail of what the deer was doing, where I got it. He asked for a pin of where the deer was, any pictures I had. So I sent him all these pictures. He asked all kinds of questions. It was really cool to talk to him and finally have someone who seemed somewhat interested in what was going on. He was very interested. So he gathered up all the information and sent the pictures to the Wildlife Health Office in Corvallis. His advice as well, I went ahead and butchered the deer and cut and wrapped it and froze it. Also saved as many parts as I could. That way, if they wanted to do any testing, you know, I had it available. And I was willing to drive to Corvallis the next day just to get some answers if they were interested. And from my message with Peter, it sounded like they would be. But when he sent it to the office, which I'm assuming they have some sort of wildlife pathologist on staff, they looked at the photos and they weren't quite as interested as Peter. They said it looked like the deer had a very bad case of liver flukes. And the only way to test that for sure is to bring it down. But not only was it the week of Thanksgiving and they were already swamped because I'm assuming because we have the bird flu outbreak going on right now with our wild geese and ducks, they just didn't have the bandwidth that week, and they weren't even really interested in testing it because what they said it looked like to them wasn't something that is really a huge worry for the deer population in general. Essentially, after they got back to Peter and then Peter got back to me, I was almost back to square one. The answer to my question was, does the meat smell good? Does the meat look good? Well, then you can probably eat it at your own discretion. So what I realized is they couldn't say, yes, eat the deer, it's safe to eat, due to liability reasons. They said that liver flukes do not harm humans. Just throw out the liver. The only way to know for sure is to test it, but they didn't really want to test it. And that was that. So a bit of an anticlimactic ending to the story. If you look at the pictures I posted, you'll see how shockingly gross it was and why I was spending so much effort to try to figure out if I could even eat this deer. And there was no smell, and the meat, when I was butchering it, looked completely normal like any other deer I've ever killed. So I decided, nah, maybe I will eat it. I was not about to feed it to my kids, my young kids, just in case. So you're probably wondering, how did the meat taste? What I did is I took one of the back straps, cut it into a steak. It started to smell a little off, but I think that's because I was in my own head about it and I was starting to really get nervous about eating this gross deer. So I intensely cleaned it. Every little bit of fascia, every tendon, the only thing that I was cooking was a little piece of pure protein meat, nothing else on it. I put the stove up real hot and I fried that thing to well done. And I never cook deer to well done. I like to have that stuff still bleeding, but I don't think I'll ever be able to do that with this deer. And the big moment, I gingerly cut a chunk off with my fork, slowly took a bite, chewed it up and paid real close attention, trying to look for anything gross about it. It actually was perfectly fine. It was just a tiny bit more gamey than my other bucks. Other than that, it tasted like completely normal backstrap. I only ate one steak, but that was a few days ago, and I still haven't seen any negative side effects. So I'm going to very timidly and bashfully eat this deer. Still, the thought of it makes me uncomfortable, so I've kind of relegated him as a grind buck. I'll just use him to make snack sticks and things like that. Maybe the dog will get some deer treats out of him as well. So this is a rare case, and most hunters will never encounter a situation like this. But there are some diseases that Oregon deer can have. Lots of different parasites that are all harmless to humans and some illnesses. Always use your own discretion when deciding if a deer is safe to eat, which is what everyone's gonna tell you. But ultimately, if you just trust your nose and your eyes, you're probably safe. In my long bits of research, I did learn about some of the parasites and diseases in Oregon's deer herd. There's lots of them. Most of them are worms, flukes, nematodes, threadworms, abdominal worms, tapeworms, all those kind of things. And all of them have just the weirdest life cycles. Like lungworms, it's pretty weird. You'll see them in the lungs and the windpipe of the deer if you do see them. But the larvae climb out of the lungs, up the windpipe, get swallowed by the deer, pooped out. They crawl up the vegetation that deer eat, get eaten, and go from the stomach to the lungs and grow to adults to start all over again. Very weird. And I mean, with lungworms, you just see them in the lungs and windpipe and they can't hurt you. So, you know, you can eat your deer if you got that. The mussel worms are pretty gross. They live in the flesh of deer, usually in the back straps. They're gross, but they're harmless. They leave behind these pussy holes and cysts in the meat. It's sort of the deer version of rice breast that our ducks get sometimes. But they're safe if you can get your mind wrapped around that. Tapeworms live in deer in different stages of their life. And oftentimes you'll see them as cysts, small cysts, when they're in the larval stage, either on the deer's liver or in the meat. And then when a predator eats the deer liver, that's when they develop into full tapeworms. So that's why, you know, you'll see bears, you'll see coyotes, you know, any kind of predator that eats deer, those are the ones that get the tapeworms. The deer usually just have the cysts, the larva. Abdominal worms, which are parasites that live in the body cavity and go around the organs, those ones are actually transferred by mosquitoes. And once again, another harmless one. Brain worms are a weird one, and they can actually cause neurological issues and death for the deer. Those ones are transferred by accidentally eating slugs and snails that have the larvae and the eggs on them. And the only way to know, because you're not really going to be digging around in your deer brain, is to see if the deer are acting weird, especially young deer. There's other sicknesses and diseases that our deer can get. One of them is EHD, epizootic hemorrhage disease, also called blue tongue. That's a viral disease that always causes death. It's not as common out here in the West, but it does happen on a regional scale. You know, places in the Midwest have actually lost huge amounts of deer during outbreaks, and it's most commonly spread through biting flies. The thing about EHD is it comes on very quickly. Suddenly, within hours, the deer is fevered, drooling, not eating, and often loses its fear of humans. And they die very quickly from hemorrhages in the internal organs and the meat. That's how you can tell if a dead deer had it, is by finding those hemorrhages and also yellowish fluid under the skin. Then there's another one that's viral called AHD, antivirus hemorrhagic disease, and that's ulcers or abscesses in the throat and mouth, which also causes death within 3 to 5 days of exposure. You know, if you kill a deer with giant warts on its body, that's fibromatosis, and it's actually known to be caused by papillomavirus, which is the same kind of virus that gives humans planter's warts. They're safe, the warts themselves aren't edible, but the deer are still edible if you get one of those. One that's a little scary is the deer plague, or Yersinia pestis. It's the same bacteria that caused the famous plague that killed thousands in Europe a long time ago. And you can tell a deer has that. One of the main symptoms is actually blindness and open sores. That's the only one you really want to be careful about. Some that are really endemic to the Pacific Northwest, you know, if we're talking about parasites, of course, there's lice, fleas, keds. Well, keds are also called louse flies or deer flies. They're those ones that fly and land on you, and they look a lot like a tick, but they only have 6 legs. What they'll do is they actually land on a deer, and then they shed their wings, crawl through the fur, and then latch on to suck the blood. Another real important one for our area that is concerning is deer hair loss syndrome. And now, there isn't really a consensus on what causes it. The running theory right now is that it's caused by a mite that the deer get, especially young deer, and they get so itchy that they scratch off almost all their fur, and they spend less time eating or otherwise surviving, and it causes a lot of deaths in young deer, especially fawns. You'll see them, they just look sick, weak, they look like they have mange, and it's because of this deer hair loss syndrome. And finally, one, this is more of a problem with elk. I just want to bring up hoof rot disease, and it's a bacterial infection that causes the hoof to deform and eventually causes injury. So if you look for an elk with elf shoes on, when it gets deformed, it curls and the toes curl up like elf shoes. It is in Washington confirmed. There's been many cases, and they're suspicious it's in Oregon, but they're still researching it, and they ask that you report any lame elk, or if you ever kill an elk with a hoof deformity, they want you to report that. I've actually found hoofs when I'm hiking before, and I didn't realize that they wanted you to report those things, because what they're trying to do is study it more and find out how they can save the elk before they all get this horrible deformity, and it can lead to death for the elk, and it definitely leads to disfigurement. Well, I hope that none of you listening ever kill a sick deer. But if you do, it's good to know that more than likely the deer is still edible, even though the meat might not be the best. Always use your nose. And when in doubt, I found out you can call OSP. The trooper will give you some insight, but the best way to go about it is to actually call the Wildlife Health Lab in Corvallis. They're the ones who have the most direct information about wildlife diseases, and if there's a concern, they'll walk you through the process. But thanks for listening to episode 4 out of 4 of our special Thanksgiving drop. It's been an amazing season. We're so thankful for everyone who listens. And we hope that we can continue to bring these episodes to you. If you want to give us ideas about show topics or who to interview, if you go to our links page, we actually have a form there that you can fill out just to leave feedback for the show. Or maybe you want to offer a correction or give some advice. You know, all that is, you can do that through the feedback form. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Wildlife health, to the wildlife. Mm-hmm.